Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome today. We're continuing to talk about cyber and in Colorado Springs efforts. Today I have a guest on with me, Bruce Parkman. He is the CEO of Main Nerve, which is headquartered right here in Colorado Springs. Bruce, welcome today. How you doing?
Hey, thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, so Bruce, we want you to give the listeners a background on yourself, Main Nerve. What do you do here for cyber?
Well, I mean, I kind of got here through a pretty circuitous route. I left the Army in 2001 after 21 years of service as a Green Beret, and I started a company that was fairly successful in the defense contracting business. And when I sold it, I had a core group of NSA hackers that were just great kids, and I didn't want to let them go, and I didn't know what to do with them. And so I found a guy that had a company that was in the cyber consulting business, and I kind of we arranged for a deal, and we've spent the last 3.5 years figuring out what cyber should be. And to a lot of people, cyber's many, many different things. It's technology, it's services, it's threats, it's data, and what we wanted to do is just figure out, where could we be most useful in the cybersecurity universe with so much competition, so much investor money that's sloshing around, and where could we fit? So finally, about 18 months ago, we made it pretty much the company's mission in its entirety to focus on the small and micro business and to search out those technologies and capabilities that would be affordable. Because a huge majority of these companies, have nothing. And according to Forrester, it's almost egregious the fact that the cybersecurity industry is overlooking this critical segment of the U.S. economy.
Interesting. So I want to start back with the Green Beret thing.
Army, huh? Yeah, this is why people say, what service, what branch are you in? There's only one branch, Army. I started out as an infantryman, and after about 3 years, long story short, my first sergeant came to me with two manila folders, and the first one was my Chapter 9 paperwork to get me kicked out of the Army because he said I was a little bit out of control, but I was really good in the field, so he gave me the other. So I asked him what was behind door number two, and he gave me another manila folder, and that had a Special Forces of Green Beret application. And so he asked me, he said, you don't have time to think of it. What do you want to do? And I said, first sergeant, now I'm going to try that door number two. And then went there and spent 18 years doing the job. And it was probably the best decision I've made in my life.
So you probably have seen a lot of things that you don't talk about, huh?
No, well, I mean, most of my problems were girls and alcohol. So, I got out in early 01. So my boys that I had at the time, I was a company sergeant major. Those kids since 9/11, man, they've seen it. They've seen it. I spent 15 months in the war in El Salvador all by myself. It was a great growing up opportunity. It was a way. It was our mission. One guy all by himself training troops. It was a lot of fun. I had met some great people in special forces and special operations. And to this day, we stay pretty tight, man. It was definitely a great journey.
Yeah. You know what? I've seen that quite often, though, myself. I spent a couple of years in the Navy. We won't go into debate there. But, the people who have the hardest time as lowest rank, privates or whatever, or seamen, actually buck the leadership trend or whatever. But then they become great leaders later because, you're not going to fit in as a follower if you're a built-in leader.
I would agree. You know, it's kind of interesting. All the cyber guys that work for me are either Navy or Marine Corps. So they go at each other bad enough as it is, let alone Army versus Navy. But the yeah, I'm still bucking. You know, that's just the way it is, man. You know, you don't, if you see something that's not right, you know, say something, you know, and you know, you've seen me in action.
I'd say I'd like to resemble that. I think sometimes your PC button is a little bit shorter than mine, but I still appreciate what comes out of the responses. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
So you said that, you know, what people say cyber is different for everybody. What's your definition of cyber? What is it?
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Well, I mean, to me, cyber is, in the cybersecurity universe, it's about protection. And the reason I would say, as a soldier, much like you'd say as a veteran, that it should be about attack. You know, so, you know, you can't have a good defense without a good offense. Or some people say you can't have a good offense without a good defense. But unfortunately, in the universe that we live in today, attack is not an option. You know, hacking back is not an option. And it's very hard even for, you know, I guess, obviously, judging from what I'm reading, you know, the government to do it. So, you know, if you can't attack, you must defend. And you know, and so to me, cybersecurity is a continuous process of refining your defense and finding that key blend of technology, training, and expertise that you can that you can afford to give you the best protection possible.
Interesting. So, I was in the Navy. We talked about that, but I worked on a nuclear power plant, and when we looked at defense, we don't think there's an option to let somebody attack. The defense of a nuclear or an engineering plant is have everything in line so that you don't possibly have a mistake. So a lot of times I take the approach, how do you engineer the best defense so that you don't have the continued offensive, defensive nature of cybersecurity? And you've seen a lot of, you know, or some of my approaches to it, which are very, you know, next generation, how do we define and create Internet 2.0 with security built in? So as far as, you know, reactive versus preemptive, what are your thoughts on, you know, I see that so much of cybersecurity is reactive, reacting to threats, reacting to traffic. How much of it is something we need to start defending and putting something into place that's going to be better?
Well, I mean, I saw your pitch last night on the ecosystem, and I think, you know, number one, I think it's very forward leaning, which, you know, which always in this universe means, you know, a little bit of time. But I think that your assumptions and your end state are admirable, and I hope that we move in that direction. You know, right now, unfortunately, cybersecurity is purely reactive, and it's a shame. And you know, a lot of the you know, reactivity is, if for lack of a, you know, better, is it big word Wednesday? I'm supposed to use some words over 7 or 8 letters. I guess I'll have to get to that. But the you know, the industry is highly reactive, and it shouldn't be that way. The problem is, how do you become predictive? Is where does the analytics come from? Where does the data come from? And unfortunately, a lot of prediction in our world, because we work a lot on the intelligence side in our past, and you know, to be predictive, you do a lot of data collection, a lot of analytics, and a lot of targeting. And that's a much harder in a universe where everybody's anonymous, there's very high levels of encryption, and then a lot of the techniques that you could use to collect information might not be permissible by law. So so that's the challenge, and if you can't become predictable, then of course you should be, you know, setting yourself up for the best the best defense you can. And you know, what's kind of interesting, you mentioned you worked in the nuclear power industry. And, you know, one of the key reasons why that industry is so impenetrable right now is it's air gap. You know, it's yep. it's not connected to the internet. And how do you get hacked if you don't, you know, if you're not attached to the internet other than, you know, an insider, like a Snowden kind of a situation, you know, pulling information from inside? Unfortunately, that does not translate very well into commercial business, because you have to have that internet connectivity, and hence you have the continuous challenge with, you know, defense versus being reactive when the time comes if you do get hacked.
Yeah. So, and I, this is something I've seen myself. I've worked with a couple, we'll say companies or organizations that have had high profile hacks. And basically they're doing the data monitoring approach. They have firewalls up, they're doing threat intelligence, you know, collecting so much information, basically collecting a real-time, almost making like a movie of their network and collecting real-time information so they can look at it in the past. At some point, though, we get to a point where there's too much data we're collecting. How are we going to monitor it all? Does this become a losing battle that we need to head a different direction in cyber?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can look at data from two perspectives. You know, number one, you need it to be able to analyze it. And the second perspective is, you know, is all this data really necessary? And there's so much collection going on right now, and unfortunately, not enough analytics. And the problem with analytics that we found, and no matter which commercial universe, and we've worked in, you know, we have companies here that are, you know, social media companies, business intelligence companies, defense intelligence companies, cybersecurity intelligence companies. The problem is that in order for analysis to be effective, it almost always has to be done by a human being. Mm-hmm. And that provides, you know, very, very critical limitations on the amount of data that can be analyzed. And then consequently, you have to back up into technology. We're seeing, you know, as you've seen, a lot of artificial intelligence play in the analytics and the filtering of the data to get down to those key data sets that are critical to identify a potential attack, or that attack is ongoing. You know, one of the things that I preach a lot when I speak is that the paradigm has shifted. It's not about when you're going to get hacked. It's about minimizing the time, the delta between infiltration or exploitation and the identification. The quicker you can identify it, the quicker you can respond. And there's a whole industry out there that I don't think is, you know, that exists, but is not really being, you know, heavily used, which is, you know, the playbook industry is, you know, building the plan of it. You know, if you do get hacked, what's your plan? And building that playbook to have on that shelf. And do you make your plan and you plan your attack and attack your plan? Do you conduct exercises and drills? So, you know, all these things come together. But, you know, back to your point about data, the issue is right now, until we have technology that can effectively, you know, analyze the I don't even know how many bytes, you know, the zettabytes that are out there, the human being, which is the biggest link in exploit, which is the biggest cause of hacks, is also one of our biggest limitations in preventing hacks as well.
Yeah, and I've heard the term that the amount of our data collection grows exponentially, especially when we have to correlate information at various points together to get threat intelligence, but the ability for humans to do anything with it is linear.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Since the year 2000, Bocor has had a history of being a leader in the Colorado cybersecurity community. They have served many front-range customers in both government and commercial industries. Right now, Bocor is looking for qualified cybersecurity professionals and offering competitive salaries, comprehensive benefit packages, tuition support, and exciting career opportunities working with cutting-edge technology. If this sounds like you, and you have a desire to guide our customers through the treacherous cybersecurity landscape, consider joining the Bocor team. Visit us today at www.bocor.com. That's Bocor.com, Bocore.com. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And I've heard the term that the amount of our data collection grows exponentially, especially when we have to correlate information at various points together to get threat intelligence, but the ability for humans to do anything with it is linear. So we have an exponential growth of data with a linear ability to handle it.
I would concur with that, and that's why we get such large intel centers with all those busy bees running around looking at screens.
So can we throw enough money at it, hire enough people to do it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the people problem is, you know, the number one problem we have right now is we can't even throw enough money at the people to get enough of them to qualify for the open positions in the United States. And, you know, it's a pretty significant point with me when we start talking about what are some of the faults in the cybersecurity industry right now. I think that, you know, it's not so much money as, you know, there's a lot of talk right now between, you know, public trust and information sharing. And until that trust can be established between, you know, commercial enterprise and the government, and then you got all your privacy, you know, activists and just activists in general, it's going to be hard to get to that point. And I don't know if you know, money's the answer, unless, you know, because so much money's being spent right now. I mean, you've got competing technologies, competing industries, you know, everybody's just chucking money, hoping for the big return, you know, get their 10X, all these VC guys. And, but in the end, none of this money's being, you know, pooled. There is no, you know, plan behind the spend. You know, what are we, if you're going to spend a couple million over here, you know, then I'm not going to, you know, spend, you know, a couple million going after the same or building the same type of technology. I'll focus over here. So if there's no correlation between all these resources being spent, then you have what you have right now, which is just a whole bunch of money being spent. And, you know, salaries getting paid, but, you know, investors not getting what they're asking for. It's a very confusing industry from an investment perspective.
Yeah, and I see that, all, you know, the investment dollars, the 99% of the effort is spent on just what we've kind of been talking about, monitoring traffic, reactive cyber. I think that has to change to where we look at a bigger picture.
I would agree with that. You know, unfortunately, having somebody look over your shoulder makes, you know, companies feel better. Yet, really, the only companies that are doing it right now are either companies that are mandated to have a third-party monitoring service, or companies that can afford it, because those, even that becomes very, very expensive and also, you know, hard to manage. And from the technology perspective, I think what hits me hardest is right now there is no dominating technology in cyber right now. I mean, you look at the, you know, everything from, you know, IDS, IPS, UTM, next generation firewalls, all the way to SIMs. I mean, everybody's pretty much the same. You know, there's no dominating technology. Nobody's out there just killing it right now, except for people in the response area. You know, Mandy's doing an outstanding job, but the, you know, and so that to me means that right now we're in this universe where everybody's kind of got the same type of technology, the same level of protection, yet we're still not keeping up with, you know, the hackers, the insurgents that are out there that, you know, one of the points I always make is, you know, the government's got to defend 1,000, or as an enterprise, you need to defend 200-300 computers. A hacker only has to crack one. Their job becomes universally a lot easier.
And on every computer, you have hundreds of applications that all have different signatures and ways into them, and the defender has to protect all of it. The hacker only has to find one way in to one computer.
Yeah, we're seeing an enormous surge in interest in penetration testing for web apps and API right now. That's probably our most significant trend this year from a cybersecurity service perspective is we're getting a lot of requests for that. And I think it's something that you and I talked about before is that industry is starting to push down these standards. If you haven't had a pen test, if you haven't had a scan, we're not going to allow you to get in the Google store or the Apple store, whatever it is. So whether it's industry or government organization or, you know, somebody's saying this is important enough that you must have it done. So that was an interesting trend that we've seen since last year.
Yeah. So do you see that there's ever a change in consumer consent or whatever that people will think, you know, I'm going to do this before I'm forced to by some governing body? Do you think that ever happens?
Well, the first two things that go in a company's budget are what? Training and security, right? Unfortunately, cybersecurity falls into that. I honestly right now don't see business being proactive in that respect. They're going to do the minimal that they have. You know, in the small and micro markets, especially, cybersecurity expertise is not affordable. You know, getting a cybersecurity expert, is just not going to happen. Most of these companies outsource everything from IT to HR. Doesn't matter. I don't think right now, until it's either mandated, right? You know, everybody loves a mandated business environment. The big cases that are making it through the courts right now, Home Depot, Target, Neiman Marcus, JP Morgan, until faults identified or that companies don't see that or see that insurance, the cybersecurity insurance is not going to cover me. Or man, if I don't have risk transfer, if I'm not able to transfer my risk because I had a third party monitoring service, a solution, I had good technology, doesn't have to be the best, I had cybersecurity insurance, and you know, until the courts rule, I think most companies are playing it safe. You know, they're spending the minimum, they're doing what they have to, and in our segment of the economy, most of them feel, you know, they're kind of like at their head in the sand a little bit, but they know when they pull it out of the sand and they're ready to do something, we're there for them. I would definitely like to see business get more proactive. And again, one of the reasons we're in this area is, you know, a lot of them are not being proactive. They want to be, but the costs of cybersecurity right now are just not affordable. Mm-hmm. And what you have, you have companies, and we've all seen it being bought for, you know, 10, 16 times multiple on revenue that weren't profitable when they were bought. You know, investors expect a return, and to generate that return, you have to charge. And so, you know, our products, our services, our technologies are trying to change the mind of the consumer by saying, look, for a cable bill, you know, you can get third-party monitoring for $200 an IP or whatever it is. We can pen test you, you know, and trying to find those economies of service to get those points down, because honestly, until something works and is affordable, you know, smaller businesses just aren't going to buy it.
Well, you know what, you hit on a point, and the thing I see is it's not as much that it's not affordable or cost too much, it's that you can't prove what it's doing. So having the ability to say, here's what this is giving you for the money you spend, is what's missing.
Yeah, and for some aspects of what we do, you know, you can, you know, firewalls generate reports. You can show that you block something, and you can demonstrate that to a, you know, a relatively high level of confidence. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, a lot of the, you know, it's IT, like accounting to most business owners, is magic. Okay. It's like, it's out there. I know it's supposed to work. I don't want to know anything about it because I know how to, you know, change tires. I know my company, I know my technology, and these are aspects of business that a lot of business owners, when you have a 5 to 10 employee company, just don't want to understand. So you're right. You need to generate, you know, some capability to say, look, you know, this stuff is working. But we come from the, you know, the risk avoidance perspective on this is like, look, by having this in place, you are less liable. You are more protected. You know, here's some industry, you know, diagrams. This, you know, this stuff does work. But, you know, we talked about what I think is the number one gap in this whole area right now, which is training. I mean, I've been in business 3.5 years. I have done tons of training. I can't give this stuff away.
Are you selling much training? That's you just hit on the thing I found out too. All this great training, I put a lot out myself. You can't give it away.
No. And it's the and like we discussed, it is the number one number one prevention of hacking that is in a small business out there, and actually any business. I mean, 80% of the hacks out there are achieved through somebody clicking on that blue link, somebody, you know, giving away information on a phone call. I mean, my company, I mean, I had a $38,000 check getting ready to go out the door because somebody emailed my company and put a one next to my, you know, the suffix on my account. And, you know, here we are, you know, we're a cybersecurity company getting hacked. That was great. And it wasn't for my cyber guys that, you know, the secretary, you know, our my EA at the time was a little like, man, this doesn't look right. I mean, to me, writing a check to Bulgaria should have just, you know, kind of set off the siren in the first place. But our guys checked in and yeah, somebody got a hold of my email. So it's the people. I mean, as long as human beings write code, there's going to be holes. And as long as human beings are involved in business, the opportunity to exploit is going to exist. And the best way to deal with, you know, to increase your defense through a human being's ability to recognize a hack is just through training. And the training is, you know, and you know the deal, it's a couple of hours. I mean, this, you can get through some of the major, you know, issues that or hacks that people see all the time. And, you know, but, you know, you can't avoid human nature and human emotions. And that's why most of these hacks are successful.
Yeah. So now shifting gears a little bit, the Colorado Springs effort, the NCIC that's been announced by the governor, the mayor's, you know, got a vision. The first thing they're talking about is we need to train everybody. And you and I are sitting here saying we've had training for years. How do you get people to engage in it? Do you think that, I mean, that main priority is the first thing they should be putting out?
Well, I think, you know, like all efforts, it's admirable. You know, if we're going to train people, we have to do it differently. Right now, from what I see and what I've heard, you know, most of the training is predicated on the university system here, you know, the four-year degree system, which as a paying parent, I've always found that to send my girls through college and end up having an unemployable person is just a waste of 4 years. And I think we need to go back to the certificate and qualifications aspects, like VocTech back in the year. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start talking about, you know, cybersecurity can be divided in a couple areas. You know, you can train analysts. With technology, you can train analysts. And that can be done. It doesn't, you know, but you need time on target. And the problem that we're having with our universities right now, and I've been in arguments with a lot of them here, is that, you know, you want, you know, 40 hours per week. I can train an analyst in a month or two. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, 2 years of student to teacher contact hours, you know, for a university. And it's a lot of money. So I think that, you know, training can be done, but we need more of a VocTech type system, something apart from, you know, the standard school system. When I look at these developers, you know, talking to computers is a language, and it's a passion. And you just can't teach that. You got to find these kids, and that really want to learn coding and programming and identify them early and train them. And I think if we had separate tracks, you know, much like the old Volk Tech system, you know, you had what, wood shop, metal shop, all that mm-hmm. stuff back in the day. I mean, I spent my entire senior year building homes because I was just a flake and working in construction. I think we need to create those parallel tracks for our children. And then, you know, training would be worth it. And I think that if UCCS and Pikes Peak and all these, you know, other, you know, higher institutes of education would just take a look at these certificates that could be earned and accredit them towards a 4-year degree, then the kids would come to their college anyways. But they, you know, if you can get a job with a 5 weeks or 17 weeks of coding instruction, you know, you're not going to want to spend 4 years in school, but you do want to get your, you know, your degree, and you'd go at night. That's me speaking.
Yeah, pull them together. So, and I've heard you say this before. You asked at one of the events we were at, you know, how are we going to draw the young people in to this technology? How are we getting the millennial and younger generation to engage? Because, you know, I don't know about you, but I've sat in cybersecurity meetings for 10 plus years, and the average age goes up every year by 1 year.
We won't talk about my gray hair here. No, that's the what I don't want to see here in Colorado Springs. This is a great community. I mean, it's a great place to live. I love living here. Our problem is right now is that to really enjoy this place, you've got to be 30 years old and have 2 kids. And we're missing the I don't know what you want to call it, but the life of a small younger community, you know, the vibrancy, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of things that we don't do here, you know, we don't allow marijuana. That would attract about every technical person we wanted to this town, unfortunately, to get here. You know, we're looking at people that, you know, are different. These young kids, they demand, or they want, an environment that appeals to them. And we have to build that here, because why train students so they can go to Austin, so they can go to St. Petersburg, so they can go to Lodo up in Denver? I mean, why waste our money and resources? We've got to keep them here. And, you know, and the skiing's good. I mean, and we got a lot of aspects for the outdoors. But if you look at the technology generation as a whole, and you look at the amount of students that go to UCCS and do not stay in Colorado Springs, I think it's, you know, there's a trend that needs to be reversed. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take some, you know, that's going to take change. And people aren't really big on change. You know, that's one of the things. And the other thing I'll say about the NCIC, and everything else that's going on, is they are great concepts, but they're defense oriented. You know, they depend on government monies. They're depending on congressional appropriations. And we don't have the buy-in from the industry that I think we need. You know, from the IBMs, from the Hewlett Packards, from all the big tech guys. You know, can they get some money? I think as a community, if cyber is going to be important, you know, is there, you know, a tax that we could, you know, look at, you know, paying? You know, can the town put in some money to show, hey, we're serious about this? But, you know, as I brought up in a meeting, and I think you were there as well, I mean, there's not too much in what I'm hearing for companies like mine in the commercial space. And, you know, and while government jobs are important and security clearances are important, the defense contracting industry is very, very well paid. These people cost a lot of money. I can't afford them at, you know, as a commercial cybersecurity entity as a whole for my force. So, you know, I think there's good in what we're trying to do, which is there's nothing wrong with building a cybersecurity nexus here in Colorado Springs. But to make it a success, I think there's got to be more buy-in from industry, and we need to ensure that, you know, we have a place for these kids to live, because I personally don't think we have it right now.
Yeah, I can see that we have stuff for them to do. It's beautiful here, the environment, the things you can do. But you're right. The urban life is, you know, not what it is in Austin and San Antonio, where, you know, they're having the cyber growth that you know, comparison to what we're looking for here. So, yeah, that's a great thing, and that's why I brought it up. I think we need to talk about it. Kind of in closing here, if you could say, give some advice to direct what is needed in this newly budding effort, what advice would Bruce Parkman give?
In terms of building a cybersecurity nexus here in town?
Absolutely.
Like I said, I would focus on at least being able to focus more on the commercial side, because that's where revenue takes place. That's where growth takes place. Defense industries do not grow. They're limited by budget. You know, they really don't move without a lot of, they're very slow. Mm-hmm. So I would try to give the commercial cybersecurity companies, or even technology companies, because it's all related, a reason to come here. You know, not just government jobs, not just security clearances. And I think we need to lighten up as a community. You know, that meeting that we were at, I mean, I think, you know, there were two people of color and maybe four women, whatever, a bunch of old white guys. Okay. And this needs to change. We need to, you know, become more, representative of the cultures that, and we might not agree with this as older white guys, you know, but it's a fact of life. This industry follows the workforce. And what we're looking at right now, I do believe, is creating a workforce that's going to leave. And so, there's a lot of contention in what I'm saying, and I get it. But, you know, I just don't see the kids saying this is a kids, it's a millennial and Generation X industry. They might not have the business savvy right now, but they're young, they're passionate, they want to do things, and they want to make a difference. And but they also want to live where, you know, they want to live. So I would get industry more involved, because other than that, you know, it's going to be a long time till a lot of the efforts materialize. And I darn sure wouldn't waste $8 million rebuilding that TRW building. I'd just go buy some building downtown and get things started instead of, I think that's not a good use of taxpayer money.
Well, thank you. That's I won't say whether I have agreement with that or not, but straight from the horse's mouth there, some advice to move forward here at the beginning of this effort. And thanks a lot for joining today, Bruce. And we'll look forward to more comments from Q as we go on. I'm sure we'll all get them.
Okay, Chris. Hey, I appreciate your time. And once again, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.